The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Gladwell. Nathan, I feel like this story is going to get you going a little bit, get you laughing a little bit, but the Jacksonville Jaguars have asked FanDuel to reimburse them for some or all of the $20 million in stolen money that former employee Amit Patel lost on the site. Just to give a little bit of background on this, Patel was a mid-level finance manager who used the credit card for the team to sort of give himself the $22 million that he stole. He used that money, and instead of either putting it away or buying extravagant stuff or all that stuff, or going on vacations or anything like that, he decided, you know what, let me go bet on some of these sports gambling sites. One of them was FanDuel, which he lost about $20 million of that $22 million he stole. And then he lost about an additional $1 million on DraftKings. So all in all, he lost about $21 million of the $22 million he stole. And now he's going to prison, and the Jaguars want the money back, whether it's from FanDuel or somehow getting it back from Patel. I don't know. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Jaguars here? Because they didn't know about this until the NFL came to them and said, hey, FanDuel has told us that your employee is doing this.
Well, first of all, I'm going to start with Patel and the fact that he can't win a bet at all. I don't know if he put $20 million on one bet or on one parlay, or if it was, you know, over time. But if it was over time, this dude really does not know how to pick trends.
Down horrendous.
That's pretty awful. But moving towards the Jacksonville Jaguars wanting their money back, this is FanDuel. This is basically a casino on the internet. You're not getting your money back. Go ahead and forget about it. That's gone. It sucks. Maybe if you were paying more attention to your finances and people were actually doing their jobs at the facility, then, you know, you wouldn't be in this situation. But hey, you are. You're an NFL team, down $20 million. Boo-hoo. You're going to make it back pretty fast. We're going to sit here and act like they're out in the streets begging for change. like, if I'm FanDuel here, it's just funny. It's all around funny. I wonder how many more finance employees you can kind of get on your sites from different companies to come bet. Obviously, no one could be as bad as Patel here because that's just a different level of losing. So I don't know, but Jacksonville, you're not going to get your money back. You can go ahead and forget about that. And you could take him to court too, and it wouldn't hold up. They wouldn't be able to do anything for you.
Yeah. I don't know how you managed to lose $21 million betting. I don't gamble or bet at all, but it doesn't seem like it's not that difficult to win at least once in a while. It's like he didn't win once. If you lose that much money on these sites, such an idiot, dude. I mean, you steal the money to gamble it away. Like,
he must have thought he was going to hit on something and make like double. And then he like used it all.
You're probably right.
Then he just crapped his pants because the most important thing there would be, what did he place his bet on? What was the one thing he bet on? Probably something stupid.
I don't know, but that's just like, he must be a horrendously bad gambler or bet or whatever you want to call him. I mean, that is something else. I cannot imagine. Mm-hmm. Another funny story here, Nathan. I know there was a lot of coordinator hires around the NFL with this coaching cycle.
One. This is a good one.
But I think this is the funniest and best one. The Pittsburgh Steelers hiring former Atlanta Falcons head coach Arthur Smith as his team's next offensive coordinator, replacing Matt Canada, who was fired last season. Nathan, what are your thoughts on the Steelers going from Matt Canada to Arthur Smith in one season?
Wow. I am personally surprised that the Steelers franchise would put themselves through this again. But you know what? Here we are. You get rid of Matt Canada. Absolutely terrible offensive coordinator. I mean, his players wouldn't even want to play for him. terrible. Absolutely terrible. You can sit here, you can compare him to Bill O'Brien. At least Bill O'Brien knows how to gain a few yards. Matt Canada's sense of a drive is to just run the ball, not for any gain at all, three straight times, and then punt the ball. That's all he did. Bill O'Brien might try a few screen passes or something like that, and mix up the play calling. But backhand is something else. But then you bring in fired Atlanta head coach Arthur Smith. He got fired for a reason. He's trash. I'm sorry. the main thing he got fired for was he couldn't run an offense well. I mean, he had a whole offensive coordinator. That whole thing went to crap. But Arthur Smith pretty much had his whole control of his personnel and everything on the offensive end. And then you're going to bring him to the Steelers, where, let's be it, they're not in the all-time best scenario for personnel. I don't know. He might just play the third string running back and run him for 200 touches or something in a season. I don't know. But I get what he did a few seasons ago with, I believe, Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's Derrick Henry. I believe Derrick Henry would have done that with anyone as his offensive coordinator. And let's be honest, Derrick Henry's offensive line hasn't been spectacular all throughout his career. So, but you look at the running back room in Pittsburgh, Najee Harris, I forget.
Jalen Warren.
Jalen Warren. I compare Jalen Warren to like Tyler Allgeier, pretty much. I feel like they're very similar backs. So maybe he can just figure something else out. No, I'm not going to hype this up. This is awful. Steelers fans, just go ahead and put the paper bags back on. It's going to be rough. at least I think so. They're going to come out and they're going to surprise me wrong or something. I don't know.
I feel really bad for Kenny Pickett, the quarterback there in Pittsburgh, because he went from Matt Canada to Arthur Smith, two coordinators that have no clue how to pass the football up and down the field. Kenny Pickett, they used the first round pick on him 2 years ago, two or three years ago, and it just hasn't worked out because of the court. I think, honestly, because of the coordinators there, just haven't put in the best position. And Mike Tomlin, I mean, for the most part, I think this is probably his last dance, so to say, as the Steelers head coach. I don't think if they don't find success this season, they'll bring him back. They're probably going to want to make a change. And with your career on the line as a head coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers, you go out and hire Arthur Smith. I personally don't understand it. There's other guys on the market like Eric Bieniemy. He could have gone and got the quarterback coach, I believe, in Houston, Gerard Johnson. He could have got. I just don't know how you land on Arthur Smith after watching what he did in Atlanta these past two or three seasons with pretty good weapons. I mean, he had Jonnu Smith, the backup tight end that he loved to use. But he also had starting tight end Kyle Pitts, who was said to be this unicorn tight end, this unicorn player, and he never used them. You draft Bijan Robinson, and then you use Tyler Allgeier for about the same yardage as you used Bijan Robinson. I mean, and you go draft Drake London, and you don't pass in the ball barely. So it's just like he doesn't use the weapons he's got, and you're going to bring him to Pittsburgh, where you got guys like George Pickens, Deontay Johnson at the receiver position. And you're going to watch Arthur Smith run the ball, like you said, Nathan, three straight times, and then just punt the ball away. I just don't understand this hire at all. Maybe I'll be wrong. I hope I'm wrong for Steelers
fans. We both hope so, but let's be honest here. Come on, we're not trying to gaslight this pick or anything.
No, it's just you're running the football wasn't the problem last year. It was the fact you couldn't pass the football, and your answer to it was Arthur Smith. It makes zero sense to me at all. Zero. I mean, at this point, might as well just kept Matt Canada. That's all I'm saying. It's like, okay, let me fire Matt Canada, but let me just go ahead and rehire Matt Canada again and Arthur Smith.
Yeah, it's basically like throwing a rock at a glass house and trying to fix it. It's not going to work.
All right, let's just move on. The Seattle Seahawks, we have two head coaching hires to go over the last two of this coaching cycle. Seattle Seahawks hiring Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator Mike McDonald as the team's next head coach. At 36, McDonald is now the youngest head coach in the NFL. Nathan, any thoughts on McDonald being hired by the Seattle Seahawks instead of somebody like Dan Quinn?
Personally, I think he's the better hire. I looked at the Seahawks franchise getting rid of Pete Carroll, and I knew that they were going to go young, and that's the direction they went in. Mike McDonald being the youngest head coach in the NFL now probably gives their team a lot of longevity moving forward, trying to get a bunch more young pieces from the draft. And ultimately, I think they're looking more towards rebuilding the roster or replacing a lot of multiple veterans on the roster. So don't look for guys like Geno Smith to stay around long. Because I think they're probably going to try to replace him in this Nets upcoming draft with the amount of quarterbacks available. But you take someone like Dan Quinn into account here, and what he was able to do for the Cowboys, which ultimately didn't look great when you count the playoff runs that they've had. I think Mike McDonald had the edge there with the amount of consistency because of his defense in the playoffs or whenever it came down to being necessary to play defense, they're always stood their ground more often than not. And I think he is someone that you can kind of get players to come play for. It's a big thing to have a head coach that is sought out after from free agents that's like, hey, this is some guy I want to play for. And I feel like that's a hire Mike McDonald. a lot of mics in the league. but overall, it's a good pickup at head coach.
Yeah, I really like this hire. I don't think Dan Quinn was the answer. Because like you said, Ethan, this hire with McDonald gives him some longevity there with him being the youngest head coach. And then they can he's really good with the Ravens, and people like what he did there, the players especially, like you mentioned, and him being able to bring in free agents. Maybe some players from the Ravens come over to Seattle and help him out and kind of rebuild that roster. The defense, I know under Pete Carroll's last couple of years, has drafted some pretty good studs. You look at the corners, Tariq Woolen and Devon Witherspoon. Some linebackers. You got Jordan Brooks back there. The one thing they're really lacking is the defensive line. So maybe they can get some help there to help McDonald get some pressure. He did a lot of good things in Baltimore with some guys like Justin Madubuike, who had a career year under McDonald. So I think he can get a lot of that out of that defense. It's just going to come. Who's going to coach that offense as offensive coordinator up there in Seattle, and who's going to be the quarterback? I think those are the biggest question marks under McDonald. And I'm excited to see what he does as a youngest head coach. And how the Seattle Seahawks team sort of rebuilds under him.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the last hire here, Nathan. We kind of talked about Dan Quinn earlier, but the Washington Commanders hired Dan Quinn as the team's next head coach. Any thoughts on the Commanders sort of settling for Dan Quinn? Because for the longest time, it was sort of, okay, well, they're either going to go after Ben Johnson or Mike McDonald. I believe on the show last week, I mentioned that. And Ben Johnson pulled his name out of the running for both the Seahawks and the Commanders job, and then the Seahawks hired McDonald. And it felt like the Commanders, like I said, were scrambling, and they just said, okay, you know what? Dan Quinn, here we go. So any thoughts on them kind of settling there to settle?
It was kind of like a wait around and just find out situation because they just saw, oh, there goes Rod Mayo. And then, you know, there goes Brian Callahan. There goes Mike McDonald and all of that. And it's like, oh, well, all the head coaches are gone. Dan Quinn just sitting there, and it's like he was last picked to be on the team for basketball or whatever. It doesn't look like a great pickup, honestly. And for the Commanders and where they are, they have good tools on defense, and I sure hope Dan Quinn can use them well because the main issue has been the offense the past few years. And who is Dan Quinn going to bring in to help build his offense? That is my major question for him. It's going to be a task.
Their offense coordinator is Cliff Kingsbury. He brought him in.
Oh, gosh. Never mind.
That's his answer.
Never mind. Oh my Commander fans, I'm sorry. You're about to go. It's basically like any Panthers team or whatever, any North Carolina team. This pretty much what it boils down to. Any Washington team is just going to be in a rebuild continuously for the next two centuries. I feel bad for Terry McLaurin. I hope he gets traded away. At least something happens here, other than ruining people's careers. Wow, that's something else. I don't have them in a spot to be able to compete with the knowledge of who they have where. I don't even know how they're gonna pick in the draft, man. I really don't.
Yeah. They're at an odd spot at the number two pick because Caleb Williams has, it's been reported that he doesn't want to play for the Bears, and he said he wants to play for the Commanders or I think the Raiders. So he's from Washington, D.C. That's the big thing. He's where he went to high school. So that's why he wants to play for the Commanders. And if they are able to get him, I think that'll be the end all be all for Dan Quinn and Cliff Kingsbury, because it's like, okay, you have Caleb Williams there's no reason this team shouldn't be bad offensively. I mean, you have Caleb Williams, you're going to have Terry McLaurin. You have Jahan Dotson. I believe Curtis Samuel is still there. Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson. The offensive line is, it's not terrible. It's not Panthers bad or Titans bad, but it's not like Philadelphia Eagles.
We'll say it's like C tier bad.
Yeah. And the defense have a lot of studs back there. You know,
I
know
Chase Young is so,
Montez Sweat, so good, but you still have some good players. You kind of address that in the draft alongside drafting Caleb Williams. I think they'll be good, but I don't think Dan Quinn was the answer here.
No,
I think Ben Johnson sort of have backed himself out of this job, realizing what this Commanders team looked like and what it was going to require for him to rebuild it. And then I personally don't understand going from a defensive minded head coach and Ron Rivera to going a defensive minded head coach and Dan Quinn. It's like a, similar to the Steelers thing, it's almost like a sidestep. You go to the same thing instead of going an offensive route and going out and hiring, let's say, a Bobby Slowick from the Texans or somebody else. I don't think this works out in the long run, especially in that competitive division with the Cowboys and the Eagles contending every year. I just don't see this working out in the long run at all. Nathan, before we move into some college basketball here, let's rank these head coaching hires this cycle. I'll go ahead and recap them for you. The Patriots hiring or promoting Jerod Mayo, the Panthers hiring Dave Canales, the Falcons hiring Raheem Morris, Titans with Brian Callahan, Chargers with Jim Harbaugh, Seahawks, Mike McDonald, Commanders, Dan Quinn, and then the Raiders, Antonio Pierce. So if you had to rank the worst one this cycle, who would it be?
The worst one? I mean, Dan Quinn really is like in the running for it.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably go Dan Quinn. Although that Bryce Callahan pickup was not swell, in my opinion as well.
Yeah. So if you had to rank the best one, the best hire you think this
Jim Harbaugh is probably the best one. He's definitely the standout hire. He's a hire with the most potential, I believe. Especially with the situation he's stepping into. I know it's not going to be completely easy, but comparing to these other teams that had to pick up head coaches, he has a better roster than every single one of them. I think that's going to help him out in the ranking. That, and he's coming off a national championship win, whether that be legal or not, I don't know. But, you know, you also got to consider a guy like Jerod Mayo. I think that he has a lot of tools in front of him as well to have success. It's just going to be a matter of filling needs in his team and being able to come up with a good game plan for this upcoming season. But as of right now, Jim Harbaugh looks the best.
Yeah, for me, I think Dan Quinn was a pretty bad hire, considering, like you pointed out when we talked about it, Nathan, the Cowboys' performances in the playoffs. It's just like, okay, let's drop our players into 15 yards behind the receivers and let's play some zone coverage and let them just catch it. His game plan just never worked out. But I don't want to be the same as you. And I don't like the Brian Callahan hire either, just based off the fact that you go from Vrabel to Callahan, and I really don't think that's much of an improvement.
It was like a down, so.
Yeah, I think Vrabel had built a good culture there. It just came down to, hey, man, you're giving him nothing to work with. You got to give him something. And I think I would have given Vrabel another year. And I think Callahan has some good things. So I'm not going to say Callahan's the worst. For me, God, I don't like the Raheem Morris hire. I really don't. I know he did a lot with a lot less in Los Angeles with that defense, but you already had him there in Atlanta and the team didn't do good. And I know it's a new, he's worked under Sean McVay and all that, but I just don't see it working out in Atlanta with Raheem Morris in the long run. It feels like Dan Quinn all over again, considering he worked under Dan Quinn there when he was the head coach at the Falcons. So that's probably the worst one for me. Then my favorite one, or the best hire, in my opinion, was Jim Harbaugh. I pointed it out when we talked about it, but it's be a little bit different from you. I personally like the Mike McDonald hire for the Seattle Seahawks. I think that was really good. Yeah, I know he's young. He's inexperienced, doesn't have head coach experience, but he did a lot with the Ravens defense this year. They were, outside of Lamar Jackson, playing pretty good football, the main reason that team made it so far and did so well this season. So I think he can turn this franchise around, and like many people have pointed out, return that team back to somewhat of the Legion of Boom. But I think it was a home run hire.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's hop into some college
basketball. Hold on one second now. I actually have a surprise for you. So
what?
Usually you flip this all on me and ask me what crappy foods I want to try, and I'm tired of Lord. It. So today we're going to be asking you if you would try the new Sonic peanut butter cheeseburger sandwich, hammer, whatever it is. Who would you try it, Alex? Let's be honest.
Peanut butter. So what's on the, it's peanut butter.
It's peanut butter, bacon, cheese, and then like a hamburger patty.
Okay. So I'm not the biggest fan of peanut butter personally. Like by itself, I just don't like go into my pantry and say, yeah, let me get some peanut butter and make me peanut butter and jelly. So I don't think I'd personally go out and try that at all. It doesn't
no interest at all.
No, not really.
Yeah. How does it feel that you were just asked to try something completely crappy?
I don't think that was as bad as.
Yeah, I'm sorry. There wasn't a lot to work with right now, but I had to work with something.
You didn't want the Spider-Man Whopper?
Because if it was completely bad, Alex, you would have already asked me about it.
Yeah, I only ask about the really bad stuff, like a Spider-Man Whopper that's like red. Yeah. Let's go and hop in, Nathan, because I really don't want to imagine what that looks like or
I'll get you a picture. Don't you? You know what? I'll go to Sonic later and go get you one. Don't you worry.
All right, let's hop. Let's go. College basketball here, Alabama, Nathan. 2-0 this week with wins against Georgia and Mississippi State. The Mississippi State win was, while the score is 99-67, that game was never close. It was a butt whooping. So what do you see from Alabama this week that really showed you that they can make a run in this tournament, considering that they really lost about 99% of their production last season?
Number one thing to start with, adversity. Great team showed adversity in tough scenarios. On the road at Georgia, this team looked like absolute crap in the first half. It was 4-17 at one point in the first quarter, and pretty much at halftime, down 14, all hope but to be lost. Georgia had momentum 90% in this game. They packed their arena. They made this their game of the week. And Alabama came out and they looked dry. They couldn't hit from behind the arc, struggling to make shots, turn the ball over a little bit, and then were out-rebounded. At one point, it was like 20-5 on rebounds, and that's completely unacceptable. They go into halftime, and they make adjustments. And instead of lying down and just taking the loss, this team decides they want to fight back. You got to give a lot of credit to Grant Nelson and the way he played and performed in the second half. He basically just started to take shots that we didn't normally
take.
He hit threes. Another thing he went back and started backing people down the post and posting them up and doing post scores. And that's something we have not seen done pretty much all season. It was like a do or die situation, and Grant Nelson rises to the occasion. Mark Sears, of course, He does his thing. I don't even need to give him an introduction because he's just an at-will scorer at this point. Rylan Griffin hit a big three down the stretch. He was all over the place on defense. Latrell Wrightsell and Aaron Estrada. Aaron Estrada didn't shoot efficiently, but he was able to get shots up, and eventually they did start to fall for him. And everyone was really active defensively, which was a big part in this win. But scoring 58 in the second half, it helps a lot.
Just a little bit.
I don't think I've ever seen that much score in a half. And I probably could take that back because Alabama consistently just destroys opponents. But this game, I don't know. Watching it, I never felt like we were in danger of losing. Even when we were down 17-4, I felt like there was always we're always going to make this run. We always had this potential to make this run, and sure enough, they did. And the final few minutes of the game, trying to close it out, because at that point, it's just a boxing match. It's a back and forth, and you're seeing who's going to be able to throw the most punches, and Alabama was able to get stuff on defense when it mattered, and they were able to rebound the ball, and they were able to take advantage of that and score on the other end of the floor. And by the time you realize it, they were up 9 with, 20 seconds to play. And at that point, the game's over. Because Georgia, I like them. I like their team composition. They don't have the firepower to be able to get back in that game, like a lot of other teams who are playing basketball currently. So that's one thing that sets this Alabama team apart from last year's is the amount of hustle and adversity they have already been through. You go back to December and the three games that you lost, Purdue, Creighton, Arizona, all three games that you let in, and they kind of just gave those games away. And now you're looking at games like, hey, we're actually the underdog and we need to keep fighting. And they end up winning this one. So I think ultimately you give credit to Nate Oates for scheduling such a tough non-conference schedule and putting them through this. I don't even know what you want. It's not even the gauntlet. It's a gauntlet, but it's more than that. Because now you're going through the SEC and you're at the top of the SEC and everyone's all surprised. And personally, we shouldn't be, because this is the exact same thing that happened the year before, albeit they didn't play as good of teams as they did this year. But they went through tough non-conference schedules, and this is pretty much Nate Oates, I guess, plan to success. It's been working to this point. And then this Mississippi State game, we don't even need to talk about, because it felt like Alabama just started with a 30-point lead and just went from there. Mississippi State had no chance of winning this game. They could not shoot the three ball. Alabama shot, 58 threes or something crazy like that. And they just kept shooting it and shooting it and shooting it. But I don't even know where you're from this. I think they're a very good team, but I don't know where I'd put them in March Madness at this point. I don't know how far they can go.
Yeah, then you look at Auburn here quickly. They have a really struggle fest last week, but then they come this week and handle business, going 2-0 against Vanderbilt, and then Ole Miss, a game they were down pretty big in the first half. And then Ted Baker Mazar reportedly goes into that locker room, tells the coaches to get out, and gives that team a pep talk. And they come out in the second half and absolutely obliterate Ole Miss, score 91 points total. Any thoughts on Auburn going forward, Nathan? Because we saw them have that little road bump, and now it looks like they got the momentum back, and they play Alabama this week.
I'm not going to focus on the Vanderbilt game. That's pretty much the second worst team in the SEC. They picked up a win against Missouri, so congratulations for them. But Vanderbilt is not in the same conversation against any of these other SEC teams, so we're not going to focus on that. Ole Miss on the road. And albeit credit to Ole Miss and the environment they were put in, it was a tough environment. And I like the way that they started out the game. Alan Flanagan really tried to take over against his former team. But the thing was, when Auburn went to halftime, they actually gained a little bit of momentum. They were able to bring within single digits. I believe they were down 9, when they could have been down 11 and at the end of the half. And whatever Chad Beckham Rosara said, obviously, what a fire under them, because they came out and they play like a completely different team. In the first half, they were turning the ball over, missing shots, and there looked to be a lot of hustle. And then the second half, it was over, because Ole Miss could not compete. It felt like Johnny Broom just kind of took over the game. Everything was like, this runs through me. Chad Baker Mazzara hit big shots down the stretch. They were finding open teammates in the corner and knocking down shots consistently. And it was like a whole different offense to what we have seen when in past cycles and past games they had struggled down the stretch. And Auburn just took over this one, ran away with it. And I believe you just attribute that to having guys who want to take over games now. And that's a big thing we discussed last week, and that's what they did this week.
Yeah, I think they did a great job. I think they got a lot of good leaders in that locker room, especially Chad Baker Mazzara going in there and telling those players, let's step it up. There's probably some more expletives in that conversation you had with his teammates.
Oh, I'm sure, but you got to keep it clean.
Yeah, but I think Auburn had a great turnaround week going into Alabama this Wednesday, hosting them. So
yeah, we'll see what happens. That is the game of the week out of every single game in college basketball. Every single eye is going to be on it, and Alabama's going for the sweep for the second straight year in a row. Auburn, this is basically a fork in the road point, because you beat Alabama at home, it looks like everything's in front of you. You lose Alabama at home, you play Tennessee on the road this Saturday. I mean, you could very well go 0-2 this week, and you could be back in the same scenario you were in the week before. So it's a fork in the road.
Yep. Well, all right, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.